Some big end-of-school results for a whole crop of secondary school students come out on Monday around the world. No, not the usual Australian Year 12 event, but the IB, or the International Baccalaureate scores. The IB's popularity is quietly growing, though it's still small, as an alternative to the mainstream secondary curriculum. Now, as its name suggests, it has a strong international focus. It insists on a second language other than your own. It emphasises students' outside school commitment, and it has additional required subjects such as the theory of knowledge. It exists in some of our public systems, but mostly in the private realm, and it's expensive, which counts it out for most. But it does sit as an obvious contrast to our established Year 12 curricula, amidst occasional debates about whether it prepares young people better for further depth study. Australia is becoming one of the biggest markets for the IB of late. Why? Well, Professor Fazil Rivzi has agreed to explain more. He's Chair in Global Studies in Education at Melbourne University. Welcome, Fazil.
Thank you.
Yes. So just a quick snapshot, please, before we look at course content and outcomes. In Australia, the IB, as you say, is largely in private schools, isn't it, which choose to offer it, say, alongside their VCE or the HSC or whatever the standard final year qualification is in each state and territory. And students in those schools choose either the state curriculum or the IB. Is that right?
That's right. IB exists quite often alongside the local state qualifications and students choose. And there is quite often a great deal of debate within schools as to which of the two options is preferable for particular students. Not all students are enjoy IB, so the teachers have to do quite a bit of work in trying to persuade particular students whether to take the local qualification or indeed the IB.
And what sort of arguments would they mount then?
Well, the argument is that IB offers a much more rounded education. It is much more rigorous. It is much more demanding. It is something that is likely to stand you in good stead if you happen to go overseas and study at a university, say, in the United States, where it will be recognized much more readily than Australian qualifications might be. That's probably not true, but those are the kind of arguments that have been put forward by teachers. On the other hand, the local qualification is familiar. Local qualification is assumed to be much more manageable by average students, if you like, and indeed is something that the universities have become used to and as a result know what to expect from.
Yes, I know that this is quite a hot debate because I have friends who are sort of, leading teachers and they feel that there's been a lot of perceptions gained around IB and even as you're speaking about it now, that it might tend to attract the higher end of qualification or of talents, and yet the local teachers maintain that particularly the various Year 12 qualifications here are really, really world class, have been, they're constantly under review and yeah. That they shouldn't be feeling in any shape or form as if they're competing.
That is my view as well. I personally believe that our curriculum has been reformed in all states, and of course the Australian curriculum itself has a very sophisticated structure. Whether it's implemented with as much fidelity as it should be, that's another question. But I think the structure of local certificates is very, very demanding and interesting and innovative in many ways. But those are not the perceptions. The perceptions are that IB is something that is unique and that can't be replicated by local systems or by state systems. So there is a war of perception going on. And of course, IBO, International Baccalaureate Organization, does a huge amount of work to promote itself to universities and has developed a special program of developing relationships with leading universities, trying to persuade them that these are some of the benefits of an IB qualification as opposed to local state qualifications.
And what are the requirements for entry into university? So, I mean, the ATAR score governs the vast majority of Australian students who want to go to university. And, of course, there's great debate around that as well as to whether it's making the whole Year 12 far too rigid and inflexible. So what happens with the IB scores?
Well, IB scores are quite often recognized alongside ATAR. Until around 10 years ago, the universities were not entirely convinced that IB did what they wanted their entering students to do. But I think having experienced IB students, they have now become readily available to any student who makes a case. So, for example, ANU offers you a place well before you have done your IB examinations. Early entry is called, and that's based on, again, certain perceptions and certain recommendations directly from the school as opposed to some external examination. So I think the whole situation is kind of changing, and the ways in which universities relate to these marks, including ATAR, are changing very rapidly, including universities such as mine, the University of Melbourne, which has become much more flexible in the ways in which the kind of things that they look at. And of course, when you go to United States, the situation is very different indeed, when the certificate and final year exams make very little difference, and it's the portfolio and the case that you make that becomes much more important, the kind of things that you have done. And that's where I think IB actually stands out, because it does encourage you to do a range of additional things on top of the six subjects that you're required to do.
Like what?
And like theory of knowledge, for example, which is a subject which invites you to consider where knowledge comes from, how it's justified, and how knowledge is used for particular purposes.
So a sort of critical mindset.
For a critical mindset. And the American universities admire that and give great deal of credence to
that. So is it becoming
there is
more...
Another,
go on.
Sorry,
okay.
There is another component called extended essay, which is a 4,000-word essay that students are expected to write, which actually combines their knowledge in an interdisciplinary way on a particular topic, quite often relating to some global issue. And there is another element called CAS, which is creativity, activity, and service. So the kind of things that you might do in service learning, for example, volunteer work, is also counted. The American universities are quite keen on those aspects of a well-rounded person who enters a university, whereas Australian universities are still largely reliant on scores, and ATAR, of course, is that. It doesn't consider all those additional things that students could do in their final 2 years of schooling.
So is it becoming more popular in Australia, the IB?
It is becoming popular, but not as rapidly as some people believe. It started in 1978. That's when the first school offered DP, which is the diploma program, the final year program, final 2 years program, is offered by 76 schools now. Most of them are private schools, and most of them are relatively elite schools. Public schools have only just begun to consider, and of course in New South Wales, it is not yet permitted.
No.
So public schools cannot offer it.
There was, because I think Victoria and Queensland public schools, some of them maybe not at that very high level, they offer it, don't they? And there was some discussion within New South Wales, but it didn't go ahead.
It didn't eventuate, and it's unclear as to why, you know, because in my view, offering another option is no bad thing, and it should be offered, you know, by some schools who can. I know that it's very expensive. It costs you something of the order of $300,000
to do one?
Per school.
Per school.
Not per student, yeah. So the schools have to pay $300,000 in order to participate in the IB program.
Where's their headquarters, by the way?
That's a very complicated thing. They're registered in Geneva. That's where they started. But their headquarters is now in The Hague in Holland. But much of the curriculum and assessment work gets done just outside Cardiff in Wales. And there are various regional offices as well. One in Singapore that manages Australia, and another one in Washington, which manages the two Americas. Half of the IB schools are, in fact, in United States. Half of the 5,000 schools that offer IB are not in around the world, but in the United States itself.
Yeah. Now, as I understand it from speaking to people yesterday, the public systems have really been alert to this idea of deep dives, of encouraging real depth abilities in their students. Yeah. And South Australia is one sort of really notable thing, New South Wales curriculum. Now, is this something that really, you know, has been learned in a sense educationally about how we form young people for the future?
Absolutely. I think IB has made a major contribution in that, in pushing the debates towards those kind of attributes and those kind of qualities. And as a result, many systems, including the Victorian system, is now looking at the possibility of introducing extended essay, for example, or some aspects of theory of knowledge in their own curriculum. I mean, part of the problem with
Professor Rizzi, I'm terribly sorry, but our clock is okay, counting down. Right. Thank you very much indeed for that overview.
Okay, thank you very much.
Professor Fazel Rizvi from Global Studies and Education at Melbourne University, and let us know if you've experienced one or other system, both systems preferably.